I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Orlando's population is expected to grow 74% in the next 20 years, putting more cars on already crowded roads. It's hoped the Sunrail commuter train will ease congestion on I-4 when it starts service in 2014. There's also a slew of other rail and mass transit projects on the drawing board in Central Florida as the region looks to cope with the demands of a growing population. To talk more about these initiatives, I'll speak with a panel of experts in transportation planning. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined in the studio by John Lewis. John is the Chief Executive Officer of Lynx, the Transportation Authority for Orange, Seminole and Osceola Counties. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
And Tawny Olori, Project Manager for Sunrail, Central Florida's commuter train, which is slated to begin service next year. Tawny, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And also we're joined by Harry Barley, Executive Director of Central Florida's Regional Transportation Planning Agency, Metroplan Orlando. Welcome, Harry.
Thank you, Matthew.
And finally, Michael Carragher, Senior Vice President and Southeast Regional Manager of VHB Millicent, a design, engineering and consulting firm that's been working on some of Central Florida's mass transit projects. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, Harry, I want to start with you. In the next 20 years, according to Metroplan studies, the residential population of Central Florida is estimated to grow by 74%. Is transportation infrastructure in Central Florida ready for this growth? I mean, that's pretty big.
No. We've got some good projects underway that will help us prepare, but a large part of this is not just how much we invest, but the manner in which we invest it. And we can't depend on the old ways of doing things. And the old ways have typically been simply building newer roads and wider roads. So we've got to look to more efficient ways of moving a larger number of people.
What are some of the priorities for sustainable growth in Central Florida as far as you're concerned?
Well, a balanced transportation system is, of course, a big element of that, and we don't have that balance in place now. We need much more emphasis on transit as we continue to become a more urban place. Another thing that's particularly important tied into that is the transportation land use connection with respect to growth management practices and things of that nature. We have to contain the sprawl, put people where they can be served more efficiently, and that, too, is another thing where rail can be very, very helpful in that process.
Tawny, I want to bring you in the conversation now. This does seem like a moment for rail in Florida, and Central Florida particularly. We've got up to four projects coming in, potentially Sunrail running north to south, an east-west system linking the airport and the convention center all aboard Florida, which could connect Orlando and Miami, and a study underway into a northwest line, the Orange Blossom Express, linking Lake County and Orlando. But the only definite rail at this stage is Sunrail. So what's been done to promote it and lure people off I-4 and sort of get them out of their cars and into Sunrail once it's up and running?
Well, we've actually just started our teaser, is what we're calling it, of our marketing program. We've already gotten billboards up on I-4, a couple going northbound and one going southbound. So we've started that. We've also started advertising on radio stations that workers frequent. We're also in the process of going to the businesses. We've done this for the past 6 months. We're going out to all the businesses located about a half mile from each of our stations and doing lunch and learns to educate the employees on Sunrail and when it's going to start, what it could do for them. We know Sunrail might not be for everyone, but those that want to make the choice to use rail and get off the arterial roadways and I-4 need to know what it is and where it's going. So we've started that process. In May, we're going to go out to those employees and employers and actually get folks ready to buy our tickets, our Sun cards, educate them on the tax benefits associated with using rail. We will then move into our pre-launch in July of getting out there and doing more marketing to get people ready to start using Sunrail.
Do you feel like there still is a bit of an information gap where people might see the billboard, but they might maybe confuse it with the old high-speed rail project, which never got off the ground? Is there a sense in your mind that people still need to sort of get their head around what Sunrail actually is and where it's going?
We get a lot of feedback from those billboards on I-4. We also have stations right near arterial roadways. People are seeing it being constructed now. So we get a lot of outreach on that. So it's becoming a reality, but it's still how to get people, how to reach them. And it's a challenge.
Now, one of the concerns that's been raised in the past is that if there's not a weekend or evening service, right, that might sort of cut into people's ridership and the popularity of it. Now, we spoke to Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer recently, and he said that there might be some flexibility around, for example, Orlando Magic game nights and the like. Is that something you're building into the way it's going to be rolled out in the first little while?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we've met with the Magic two or three times, and we're working on a partnership with them as well as we speak. But we do have an offer evening service. Actually, our trains run until about 11:30 at night. So there is some flexibility on game nights to sort of tweak that when the trains are there and can take people home. So we're looking at that with the Magic. In fact, the Magic would like to incorporate that into their season pass holders rather than going and using parking, get on SunRail. So we have a lot of those great conversations with our partners. In terms of weekend service, absolutely. We have all our agreements with CSX, all our operating windows are 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So if there is a push in the community and the locals would like to add weekend service, that is, we've got the flexibility to do that and have those conversations.
And there's funding to do that as well?
There is no funding. It's not a part of the interlocal agreements at this point, but there is flexibility within the interlocal agreements and to talk about those funding options and things. So that's certainly a conversation we can have.
Now, you would be hoping, I suppose, that the Magic start to do a little better next year to get more of a rider base.
Oh, I know they're going to do better next year.
John, let me bring you on the conversation now. Let's talk about integration into the current public transportation system here in Central Florida. How does Lynx plan to connect to these various rail systems, starting with SunRail?
All of our fixed route vehicles will have access to those SunRail stations. But really where we're working most diligently on and really concentrating is how do we make those last mile connections? You know, commuter rail, just by its design, is there to bring people from the suburbs into those urban core areas. And so when that individual gets off the train, they're kind of stuck. How do they then get to that destination? And so in our urban core in Orlando, we are more than meeting that need through the expansion of our limo service. That is our bus rapid transit service, where Lynx vehicles are operating in bus-only lanes with signal priority. And so when you get into the downtown area, there isn't many areas throughout the downtown that you can't get to quickly and effectively using a limo service. Now, we're working with Tawny. Tawny mentioned the outreach to businesses, and Lynx is working with them to understand what those destination points are in other areas. When we get out into suburban areas like Longwood and Castleberry and down in Poinciana in Phase 2, we want to understand exactly what those potential destination points. So we are making sure that we have the right resource to that demand. In some areas, it's going to be a fixed route bus. You can get off some areas and have access to a fixed route vehicle and get to your destination. In the other areas, it's going to be our limo service, our bus rapid transit. In others, it may be a very fast-growing segment of our operating model, and that's our van pools. Lynx currently operates over 70 van pools throughout the service area. We've got van pools coming from downtown Orlando to Space Coast to Lake County. And so we think that's going to be another resource for them. So you have a number of vehicles that are in a business park somewhere in the vicinity of a SunRail station. The ultimate flexibility is to join your commuting times. Everyone gets off the 8:30 train. There's a Lynx van that's waiting there. Those individuals get off the train, get in the van, go to work. They have the ultimate flexibility because they're determining their commuting times. And so what we're working again with FDOT is to understand the demand, understand where those destination points are, and making sure we're putting the right resource there for our passengers.
Now, when you talk about having vans or buses or what have you sort of waiting at the right timing, that's got to be a challenge, right, especially in somewhere like Central Florida where know, congestion is growing on the roads, getting a van or something to the Sunrail stop at the right time, that's got to be a challenge.
Well, the van pool is actually the easiest way of providing those last mile connections because the individuals can control it. On our neighbor links or our fixed route vehicles, we are determining the schedule. And those schedules are impacted by the vagaries of the operating environment. There's an accident on 1792. There's traffic congestion because of some event that's getting out on another corridor. But on a van pool, we've got eight colleagues and all of us work in a business park. We're getting off the 8:30 train. That van is waiting there because that we take that van to work. In the evening commute, we bring that van back and we leave it parked at the Sunrail station. One of the individuals in that van pool will take the keys home with them, and they'll do the same thing coming back. So they have ultimate control of their commuting, of that last-mile commute through van pool. Now, others will be on our NeighborLink service, where we'll have scheduled service. We're working on a new model where we can take advantage of technology so we can do some real-time scheduling for our NeighborLink service, where individual can use their cell phone or PDA on the train, and that vehicle will endeavor to be there within a short window once that train arrives, or get off it once again, get off that train and make use of our limo service, which during peak is 5-minute service. So there's no more than 5 minutes between vehicles. So, again, we're trying to make sure that we have the right resource available to our customers when they get off that Sunrail train.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. We're talking about Sunrail and other mass transit projects in Central Florida with John Lewis of Lynx, Michael Carriger of VHB, Harold Barley of Metroplan Orlando, and Tawny Allore of Sunrail. I'm Matthew Petty. Join the conversation online at Facebook or Twitter or email us at intersection@wmfe.org. I want to ask you now, Michael Carriger, you've consulted on a lot of these projects. Do you see all these different rail systems here coexisting together?
Absolutely. Having them coexist is actually a great thing that they're all coming together. And they're kind of, because of the pace that they're being planned out and rolled out, has the opportunity to really create that integration of the systems. I mean, Sunrail has the great opportunity to be that spine of the region. And when you think about the All Aboard Florida providing connectivity down with Miami and having that ability to kind of connect, you know, at the airport, when you think of the Orange Blossom Express going out the 441 corridor and tying in to Sunrail and downtown, these all have the ability to kind of link together and provide people great options for mobility. You can imagine getting up in the morning someday in Mount Dora, hopping on a rail that brings you downtown. Maybe you go all the way to the airport. Maybe you connect with Sunrail, go down to the airport and continue your trip, and you start business in Miami later that morning. And you've had all that opportunity on the train to kind of get work done, get caught up, be ready and fresh and ready to go rather than thinking of driving or battling through the lines of security to get on a plane. So the opportunities for these to coexist and integrate are wonderful, and the way they're playing out in a thoughtful manner and the way they're kind of layered in by time works great.
In places where they do have good mass transit, like Washington, D.C., for example, the value of real estate around those mass transit stops kind of skyrockets. It goes up astronomically. Is that something which you have to think quite carefully about and manage if you're talking about areas where there might be sort of people who've been living there for a long time and they might sort of end up being priced out of that particular neighborhood? Or do you think that's something which can be thought about carefully and planned and it can be a good thing having those property values go up?
I've seen it planned and unplanned. You know, both of those scenarios can happen. When you plan it and you think about the community that's there and the people who live in that community today are part of that planning process, and you think about, you know, how do the use of land around the stations change? You know, how do you put really supportive activities of what's happening at a commuter rail station, if we use that for a specific? What happens around a commuter rail station? What are the living conditions? What are the values that might go up and encourage more dense housing there? But if it's done properly and done over time and done with the participation of the citizens and the businesses in the community, you can really create what is an opportunity to enhance that area and kind of be the crown jewel of a local community. And it's interesting how much time, you know, there'll be a period of time where each of the stations will kind of play themselves out for what is their characteristic, what is their community looking to do, you know, after Sunrail opens. And as you'll see in that kind of 5 to 10 year period, that the people who are making housing decisions relative to where do I work, where do I live, well, I think I want to be near a SunRail station. Those will play out over time. So it gives the communities a chance to really thoughtfully put together kind of master plans and really think about, well, if someone were to get off at the SunRail station here, what can they walk to? Can they have access to a bike sharing network? What are the connectors, like John was talking about, whether it's a shuttle system or a van? You know, and how do you really create a great place there that the community is comfortable with, that the people have bought in with, and the property values increasing creates a greater tax base that allows that community to thrive.
Harry, I want to come to you now and ask you a question about bus rapid transit. Now, John was talking before about the system we have here in downtown Orlando. I want to ask you, though, I mean, I know that I-4 with the I-4 Ultimate project, there is perhaps some potential for using some fast buses on some of those lanes there once that program is developed. Is that something which should be given a higher priority, do you think, bus rapid transit in Central Florida?
Well, there are several studies underway looking at bus rapid transit and the opportunities there. Limo has certainly been a huge success. In fact, many people don't know it, but the first bus rapid transit project in America was right here in Orlando with Limo. That was where it all began, and it's proven to be very popular. So as John mentioned, Limo is expanding in downtown Orlando, and a couple of other corridors are being considered for bus rapid transit. Often that's the right decision. In other cases, that can mature into some form of rail transit. So there are a variety of options out there. But bus rapid transit's a very, very attractive alternative, and I think we'll be seeing more of that in the future as well, both bus and rail.
What do you think the impact is going to be of All Aboard Florida if and when this gets up and running? This is the private rail system which would link Orlando with Miami, and it's been sort of touted as an alternative to flying, of course.
Well, I see it as a huge plus. It represents a private investment. No public funds are to be involved in that project. And providing that type of connectivity between one large metro area, Central Florida, Orlando, and South Florida is really important. That'll be good for the economies of both regions. So that's not a piece here in terms of moving people within Central Florida, but it's connectivity to another major metro area. A lot of demand for travel between those two, and I think All Aboard Florida will be a huge success. And I hope beyond that they'll consider some other possibilities. Maybe we can resurrect some of those old plans that didn't materialize.
Tony, I want to come to you now. Talk to me a little more about the incentives that might be offered to employees to ride the rail for a start to sort of get them involved and used to it.
We should start our demonstration services for the project by the end of this year. So when some of the other panelists say they need to see it, feel it, touch it, we've got about 3 months of demonstration services where we're taking the trains out and going for test drives with them. So we are looking to get some of our employees and employers involved with doing and being a part of the demonstration services. I know there's a lot of people that want to see it and ride it. And that helps our operators too. So by the beginning of next year, we should be running trains up and down the corridor, which will give our residents 3 months to say, oh, it's here. It's, you know, I'd like to try that. So those are some of the incentives that we're working with. We're working with some companies to actually provide our Sun cards in retail outlets to the convenience factor. So you can go into a 7-Eleven as you're buying gas or go into a CVS and actually purchase a Sun card. Once you leave that store, it's live. It's ready to go. So that when you go to a station, you just tap on and get on the train. We're also working with Wi-Fi providers so that when our customers get on the trains, they can sit there and look at the internet, work, whatever they need to do. We're also redesigning our website to do a consumer website so that if you're at a meeting downtown, you can actually go to our website and see where the trains are so that you can see, okay, my train is on time, and you can see exactly where it is. So we're trying to make it as convenient as possible for our customers.
John, I want to ask you, do you get the sense that SunRail is going to have a significant impact on how many people are using Lynx as well? I mean, if those two services are integrated fairly seamlessly, are you going to get a lot more people riding your buses?
I think, number one, there hasn't been a rail project in the last decade, if not two, that haven't absolutely blown through their ridership estimates. And I have the same expectation of SunRail. The folks have to be conservative in order to meet their financial models, but oftentimes we see the excitement and use really gets the community energized, and the usage of that rail system is even higher than anyone ever expected. Now, that being said, Lynx moves about 95,000 people a day in our system. While we expect great ridership from SunRail, we have the capacity in our service currently and the additional service that we're working with FDOT to handle that increase.
And talking about the last mile, too, I mean, I know that there's talk of maybe bringing in some bike share and also talking about the needs of pedestrians in that last mile scenario. How do you and Lynx work in with things like bicycle and pedestrian?
Well, our goal at Lynx is really to be seen as a mobility manager for Central Florida. When you think about think of the Lynx Central Station where SunRail will be served, at that you will have access to rail service through SunRail, our limo bus rapid transit service, which will serve that area, our regular fixed route service. All of our vehicles have access, bicycle access to it, and all transit riders at some point start or end their trip as a pedestrian. I think also when we're looking at it from the holistic standpoint, there is a segment of the SunRail system that seems to be overlooked, and that's those big parking lots that SunRail is constructing at each of those stations. The vast majority of people will begin that trip as a car commuter from home to the station, get on the rail, and then we're looking at making sure we provide that last mile connection. And so when you look at it, we're really integrating through SunRail and the services that Lynx are providing an absolute cafeteria-style menu of service options. You can begin in a car and end as a pedestrian and go vice versa. You start as a pedestrian on the reverse trip, get on either a Lynx van pool, a neighborhood link, a BRT, or fixed route service, transfer to rail service, and end potentially in your car. And so we're providing options along with FDOT and through SunRail to every mode of transit out there.
Do you think you might see some Central Floridians ditching their car altogether?
I hope so.
I want to give you the last word here, Michael Carragher. Now, looking at what's happening in Central Florida in terms of these rail and other projects, does Central Florida really have a chance here to do something completely different from whatever else is going on elsewhere in the United States?
Central Florida has a great chance, I think, to kind of learn and cherry pick from the great ideas that have been implemented around the country. And I think that's when, what you're seeing right now come together is that Central Florida, growing off the spine of SunRail, is looking at BRT opportunities in corridors like State Route 50 or the US 192 or 436 north of the city. It has the opportunity to see how the privatization efforts, the public-private partnerships that were talked about earlier, whether it be the All Aboard Florida or the Maglev project to the convention center to the airport, how these can weave together and how they really make a difference. And what have we learned about transit-oriented development planning? You know, how do you plan these communities around stations? We can look to what's happened in Charlotte, in Phoenix, in more mature cities like Washington mentioned earlier, Boston, Chicago. We can look from them and take a lot of the great ideas. And that's what's been fascinating to see Metroplan Orlando really kind of taking the leadership on that, bringing everybody together from the different communities and Lynx and Florida Department of Transportation and work to kind of get those ideas into the communities. And there's been a lot of programs where the region has brought in guest speakers from people around the country to kind of share best practices. And that's what makes this really exciting, because Orlando is sitting here with an opportunity to kind of learn from those things, implement it in a very unique Central Florida way. And that's why I think it actually is a very promising opportunity for the future here.
Michael Carragher of VHB, thank you very much for coming in and speaking to us.
My pleasure. It's been a great time.
And thank you also to Harry Bailey from Metroplan Orlando.
Thank you.
And Tawny Allore from SunRail Commuter Rail System. Thank you.
Thank you.
And John Lewis from Lynx. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you very much, Matthew. It's been a great conversation.
I also spoke to U.S. Representative Corrine Brown. She represents Florida's 5th Congressional District and is a member of the U.S. House Transportation Committee. Congresswoman Brown, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Now, I want to just go back to the era of high-speed rail when it seemed like there might be some funding for that back in 2011. That was obviously rejected by Florida's Governor Scott, and you were upset about that at the time. But now with a number of other rail projects in progress or on the drawing board in Florida, do you think this is a good chance for passenger rail to make a real comeback in the Sunshine State?
First of all, let me just say, it wasn't a chance. We had funding for $3 billion. Which it was 60,000 jobs. We had funding. The state only had to come up with 10%. The Florida House and Senate had voted in favor of it, and Charlie Crist was the governor. It was a change in the governorship, and the governor rejected the money. And, you know, it is a real problem when the state had voted, they support high-speed rail, and through their legislative bodies, they had voted for it. So one person made that decision. So I want to be clear. And we had 90% of the funding, and we had eight other companies, countries that want to be partners. We had 90% funding from the federal government. Never would that happen again. See, so many of the people that visit Florida, we are one of the number one tourist destinations in the world. And so they fly into Miami, they jump in a cab and say, Orlando. They don't have a clue. And see, they are very used to, in Europe and other places, flying in, going downstairs, getting on a train, and going all over Europe. But you see, most people don't have that experience in our country and in our communities.
With SunRail rolling out in 2014, once people actually get the chance to try commuter rail, do you think that will open the door for other rail projects in the future in Florida?
Yes. Well, let me just tell you, in hearings that we've had from, you know, the heads of France and the Italians, what they're saying is that once you get high-speed rail in one area, the rest of the country will demand it. We've got to have it. We've got to have it. What? Now, the system that we're looking at in Florida are going to be commuter rails, you know, not high speed, but that's fine because you need the feeder line. You can't just have a high speed and not a feeder into the system. And so you've got to set up a system. And so the private are working on that. I think it's the FEC line that I'm very supportive of. They're going for I think a RIF loan, and I'm very supportive. And I've met with them. I've also met with other companies that's interested in coming to Florida. So they think Florida is still a exciting place to be when it comes to rail transportation. And so we're going to get there. We were real close, but we're still going to get there in Florida.
And when you say FEC, you're referring to the All Aboard Florida project. And
that's correct.
That's about a $1.5 billion project to link Orlando and Miami with a privately operated and run passenger train. Do you have some kind of say in helping the company get that loan, that federal loan, which would help them build that project?
Well, I've talked with the chairman of transportation, and what we're trying to do is streamline the process. I'm very supportive of it, and I've met with the company, and I want to make sure that we can cut down on how long the review process takes place.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about SunRail. I mean, it's been touted as an alternative to I-4 congestion, but do you think it also make a difference to people on low incomes, you know, folks who don't own cars, perhaps?
Right. Well, we've got to think out of the box, and how do we move our people, around. When you look at the Chinese, they are putting $350 billion into rail because they see the importance of people being able to get to work and move around. I mean, if we had high-speed rail in Central Florida, you could work in Miami. And everywhere you build a station, that is an economic engine. And so that is the key. When you build a station, then it's going to be a Starbucks and it's going to be a daycare. And so it's all kinds of opportunity for the community once you build a station.
That was Congresswoman Corrine Brown, who represents Florida's 5th Congressional District and is a member of the U.S. House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.